They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, listening audience and adoring fans, to the Magellan's at the Movies podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Mogulyines, joined as always by my co-host, Elliot Mogulyines. Elliot, this was an exciting week for me, probably not for you, but on Monday or Tuesday, I think it was Tuesday, the first trailer for Wes Anderson's new movie, The Phoenician Scheme, was released. This is one of my most anticipated movies of the year. I think the trailer looks great. It's got me very excited. But I did just have to say, briefly, that this trailer has reignited what I find to be the most tedious of film fan discourse, which is people continuing to criticize Wes Anderson for making the same movies with the same style as he has for the last entirety of his career. And I just think this is a really tedious thing that people bring up. And I just wish that people would clarify what they mean by that. Because I saw some people saying that they feel like his style is getting more and more removed from humanity, which I think is a fair criticism. If you just don't like his style, that's a fair criticism. But saying, he's a bad director because he keeps making movies in a style that he clearly enjoys and finds interesting, that is such a stupid non-complaint, in my opinion. And it's even dumber coming from people who it's like, what? Firstly, saying that he makes the same movie every time, please just watch one of these. The French Dispatch, while stylistically similar to Asteroid City, has nothing in common with it in terms of story structure or in terms of what the movie is about or what the movie is saying about people. They're about completely different things. But my other issue with it is, what exactly are these people wanting Wes Anderson to do? If he released a trailer and it looked like a Zack Snyder movie, I would be pissed. That would be the falling of an icon, in my opinion. But anyway, Elliot, I promised that after my rant, I would ask you a question. My question has nothing to do with Wes Anderson, because I'm assuming you have very few thoughts since you're not really a huge Wes Anderson buff like I am. My question was going to be, are you excited for Sam Mendes's current film project, which is, if you're not aware of this, he is making 4 simultaneous movies about each of the 4 Beatles. So he's making a movie about Ringo, Paul, John, and George. And he is planning to release all 4 on the same day in April 2028. All 4 Beatles movies will be released in theaters on the same day in what the company people are saying will be a once-in-a-lifetime movie binging experience. Elliot, I don't think you're a huge Beatles guy, but you like Sam Mendes as a director. What are your thoughts on this project and idea?
I have no interest in that whatsoever. I have never been able to muster up that much interest in the Beatles. So, yeah, doing one for each of them, I mean, that's kind of absurd in my eyes. but, I mean, whatever. I'm more than happy for it to be the movie event of the decade and for it to do well, but I will not be contributing to its success, in all likelihood.
I just think it's crazy because, like, if you think all four of the Beatles are equally interesting and worthy of a feature film about their lives, then, you know, I would just love to shake your hand and have a conversation about that. Because to my money, I don't see how... I've really loved people pointing out that, like, the Lennon and McCartney movies are going to make a lot of money because everyone loves them, and then Harrison's going to do decent, and no one's going to a Ringo Starr movie. Because what... I don't know, maybe I'll be proven wrong, maybe I'll eat my words, but I just don't see what's interesting and captivating about Ringo that he would need his whole whole movie. I mean, you know, Lennon's going to be over here doing sit-ins, and Ringo's going to be over here doing some goofy drum nonsense.
Well, frankly, I don't see why Lennon should interest me any more than any of the rest of them. Like, yeah, he participated in a lot of social movements, but did he contribute anything to them? I'm going to say probably not.
I mean, he contributed, you know, the voice of one of the most famous people in the world, so I think that's contributing something.
I don't know, man. Celebrities are always overestimating the level of, like, personal influence they can exert over people's ideas.
I'm not going to speak to how much influence John Lennon had on the culture in a time period that I wasn't alive for and have very little, you know, study in. But I don't know. I think I was telling my wife about this thing, and I went on this whole thing where I was like, this is such a stupid idea. This is so pointless. And then she was like, you're going to all four of them, though, right? And I was like, yeah, obviously I'm going to go to all four of them. Like, this is the dumbest idea I've ever seen. Of course I have to watch all four in one day, in one sitting. So maybe, you know, maybe it'll be like the Minecraft movie thing, that it's so dumb of an idea that people are like, dang, we got to go and support this stupidity.
I don't understand that. I don't understand that mindset at all. When I don't care about things, when I don't like things, I don't think about them. I don't pursue them. I don't make videos about them.
Well, I think you're a little bit more mature of a person than I am in some way. So I think that's, you know, coming out there a little bit.
Wow. Now I'm blushing.
Great. Well, anyway, Elliot, let's dive into this episode and, you know...
let's dive in.
Well...
Where'd you come up with that?
Okay, come on now. There's only so many different ways you can say let's begin to discuss the thing that we're trying to discuss here. But I'd say maybe let's start with this, Elliot. We're doing Tron Legacy. Obviously, we're doing it because Tron Ares received a trailer... a couple weeks ago. Elliot, have you seen this trailer? Are you excited for this? What's your, you know, familiarity with the Tron franchise before we start reviewing Tron Legacy?
I've seen this trailer. Boy, was I not impressed by that trailer. Holy cow. Tron stuff in the real world and Jared Leto. That's one of the worst combinations I can think of. And also, how is Jeff Bridges back?
I don't know, dude. Clue, the cast list that I saw said that Jeff Bridges was playing Clue, which I was like, dude, what? No spoilers, but I'm confused as to how that's possible.
That's weird. In terms of Tron proper, I have seen the original movie. I watched it as research for this episode, and I liked it okay. I think it's a fun fact about Tron. It was one of the first movies to make extensive use of CGI, and it was passed over for a special effects nomination at the Oscars because it was thought that using computers to create special effects was cheating.
Wow.
Yeah, so
I mean, that's what we're going to look like when the first AI movie comes out and we're like, oh it's, you know, it's cheating to use AI. Hey, it's still a computer. We're not going to dive into that. That's a joke that does not reflect the real opinions of anyone on this podcast.
Anyway, Tron Legacy. Now that's it. That this movie and I, we go way back. This is a frequent movie seen. It was frequently watched in the Mogollon's household. It's nice because their little disc things are frisbees, right? In the original, I think they might actually be plastic frisbees that they got from Walmart and just painted. Yeah. But that makes it really easy to play Tron. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we did. Boy, didn't we?
Well, not Tron Galaxy.
There's an inside joke. But yeah, I really liked this movie as a child. It was just something that I really enjoyed. It wasn't something that I would call formative as much as a piece of fiction can be formative in the way that like Indiana Jones or Star Wars was, but still it was always something that I looked on fondly. And this is the first time I've watched it in years, maybe even a decade.
Wow.
So yeah, I came into this very fresh. Do you want me to give you my first thoughts, or do you want to explain your history with the movie?
Well, obviously I had a very similar history to you. I did just want to jump in and say, putting Tron things in the real world seems like the kind of idiotic idea that we would come up with as like a way to play.
That is so true.
That, like, when we would play outside, we would often crib from and steal ideas and just, like, franchises from the movies we were watching. And so Tron in the real world is the kind of thing that we would have found really engaging as a kid. But as an adult, I'm like, that's terrible. Like, why do I want to see that? Not to mention, the basis of this is that we, with our nukes and stuff, can't beat a bunch of frickin' light cycle driving fools. These people are like dust. They don't exist. Whatever. That's just to say, I agree with your assessment that Tron Ares does not look good, and I'm not excited for it. But Tron Legacy, I do have very fond memories of, and I think, Elliot, let's share our opening thoughts here.
Well, I am very surprised to report that I like this. Wow. I was not expecting to enjoy it. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. That's not to say that I loved it, because I didn't. And there's some things in this movie that I think are quite poor, specifically in the areas of character building, character development, and world building. But honestly, there was enough here to pull me through, to keep me engaged and entertained. And by the end of the movie, I was like, dang, that wasn't too bad at all. Like, yeah, I just had a simple, enjoyable night. I had a little bit of pizza. I watched Tron Legacy. Excuse me. And it was fine. I think that the things I most liked about it were Jeff Bridges' performances. Fantastic. Like, he is trying way harder than this movie deserves. Special effects and music. It was all like just enough to barely paper over the cracks of the story and the characters and the stuff that is not good, and left me, I would say, satisfied.
Yeah, I would say I'm in a very, very similar boat as you, that I enjoyed the movie. I had a fun time watching it. I don't think there was ever a part of the movie that I was upset or irritated by what the movie was doing. And yeah, I would echo a lot of the things that you said about what's good about the movie as well as, you know, kind of what's bad about the movie. So I think maybe let's start by talking about the technical elements of this film, because I do think it's the strongest parts of this movie. I mean, it looks really, really good.
And one exception.
Well, yeah, there's one obvious exception, that the de-aging on Clue looks bad.
Holy cow.
I love that. I saw somewhere that, like, this is the same face de-aging technology that Disney has now used for, like, all of the Star Wars movies and stuff. So I'm glad that they haven't improved it at all since 2010, because I swear, Luke in The Mandalorian looks just as bad as Clue does in this movie. Which is not to say that they look... right, they don't look like a polygonal mess or something. It's just obvious. It looks like a video game. It looks kind of like, oh shoot. What are the name of those, fiddlesticks. The name's escaping me. But, Detroit Beyond Human? That's the video game that, like, this face animation kind of gives me the same vibes, where I'm like, it's good. If this was a video game, that'd be good animation, but since it keeps showing Clue and then showing a real human face that has nothing, you know, modified on it, I'm like, oh, that's clearly not real.
Yeah, is it Quantic Dream? Is that the studio?
Oh yes, yeah. Wow, good job, Elliot. Holy cow.
Well, I'm a gamer. I'm a capital G gamer. I'm into that scene.
Yeah.
No, it is awful. It is real bad. And that's all there is to say. It doesn't deserve further analysis. It just looks terrible, and it was a terrible idea.
Yeah. But the rest of the movie looks fantastic. I mean, the grid looks so sick and so cool. This is another reason why moving into the real world is such a huge disservice, because, like, the original Tron, you could say the stuff in the grid doesn't look great because it looks a little, you know, clearly it is the first movie to use computer generated graphics. No one's gonna confuse that for something that came out in the 90s. But at the very least, it's something that's very imaginative and very exciting to see. And Tron Legacy is a similar sort of feeling. As soon as Sam gets into the grid, you're like, dude, this is sick. This is clearly kind of otherworldly, and the light cycles look awesome. The sound design is incredible. Obviously, the soundtrack is so sick and such an integral part of how cool this movie is. I mean, when Jeff Bridges as Flynn steps onto the grid and changes the music in the, like, club that he's going into, that is a sick, sick scene. And even though there's issues with the movie, it's stuff like that that is really exciting to me, that it's just, like, good, solid filmmaking and, you know, just putting things on the screen that makes me feel like I'm way younger than I am, where I'm just like, dude, that's dope. That is sick. I love that.
Dude, I agree 100%. You honestly took the words right out of my mouth. This movie, in those moments, had a transportive effect on me that I felt the way I did as a kid when I first saw The Grid. And there's just so much potential in that first shot of the city that you're like, whoa, what's going on in the city? Honestly, To like kind of foreshadow one of my big negatives in terms of world building, I was disappointed that we spent so little time in the grid or on the grid in the city.
Yeah.
Right. I wanted to explore. I wanted to see more of the city and the people and what happens in there. But yeah, it just looks so cool. And moments like Flynn arriving at the nightclub and doing a little kneel, he's wearing a cloak, and he's got his hood up.
Yeah.
That is so darn cool. And it's kind of a simple childish cool, but I mean, it just works. It just works for this movie. And I would apply that to so much of the rest of the movie, like the outfits that light up. That's done practically. That's pretty sick. The vehicles are all awesome. I love the light trail technology thing. Even though I'm not sure in the light cycle thing, I'm not sure how the arena is not just like covered in light trails, but it looks awesome. All of the vehicles, man, they're so cool. The train, the jets. I wish that I could watch this movie in VR and pause it and just spend some time looking at the outfits and the vehicles and just going like, oh, that's so cool. It's so slick. Daft Punk, they are laying down some sick bars. That's what the cool kids say on that soundtrack. I listen to it casually. I don't know about you, Nathan, but I listen to the soundtrack casually.
Yeah.
And I am not 100% sure why Nine Inch Nails, a rock band, chosen. What?
You might recognize the names of the gentlemen in Nine Inch Nails. That's Reznor and Ross.
Have they ever... Is techno hip-hop their wheelhouse?
Well, they did the soundtrack to The Social Network and Gone Girl and
Nathan,
Soul.
Those soundtracks are not in any way analogous to this movie soundtrack.
Well, I don't know. You know, Daft Punk wasn't analogous to the soundtrack of the original Tron. I think Nine Inch Nails will do a good job. I think Reznor and Ross are very, very talented individuals. I listen to multiple of their soundtracks casually all the time.
Well, I disagree. I think that's a weird pick. But anyway, the point is that the music is fantastic. The movie looks cool. I wish I could be in this place. I wanna see what it's like, see where all the stuff is. I wanna be in the buildings and walk on the streets, and I just wanna explore it.
Yeah, you wanna be where the people are. Up where it's, I can't remember the rest of the lyrics, but you're kind of doing
what
the
are
same
you talking about.
The song in The Little Mermaid, part of their world. That's what it is. Your thing at the end there sounded a lot like lyrics from that song.
I don't think I've ever seen The Little Mermaid all the way through.
What?
Can we move on? Let's move on.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. No, I agree with all of that. I think where we start running into issues is the fact that this movie is not just 2 hours of Daft Punk soundtracking people fighting on light cycles with sick discs. There is characters in this movie, and parts of the movie are them talking. So we've got a couple of characters here. Sam Flynn, played by Garrett Hedlund, I believe is his name. Yes. Son of Flynn, Jeff Bridges as Flynn from the original Tron, as well as Clue from this one, and then Olivia Wilde as Cora are kind of the main three characters. And my thoughts on all of these is they're pretty mediocre as characters, in my opinion. I think Sam is an okay protagonist. He is completely serviceable, I would say. There is very little to write home about for him. It doesn't, like, it seems like the movie wants to do something about accepting responsibility and growing up, sort of, in terms of an arc for him, but I don't really think it comes through. Cora is just kind of there to do things. Not only is Cora just, like, there for most of the movie, at one point, Cora leaves for no discernible reason in my mind, and then is, like, instantly saved by the heroes. She, like, runs out to distract Rinsler, and then, like, two scenes later, she's saved by the heroes, I'm like, did we really need that? I feel like you could have stayed with them and then continue moving, but whatever. Korra's just kind of there. And then Flynn from the original movie, Jeff Bridges, I think he's pretty good. He's an interesting character in the sense that he's kind of a hippie sort of person who's, you know, now really old, which is mildly interesting, but I didn't find him wildly compelling to me. He didn't do a lot to add to the story in my mind.
Yeah, I don't think that the writing is doing very much to help these guys.
No.
Because it's a very by-the-numbers... They're very by-the-numbers characters in a pretty by-the-numbers story. And to the extent that Flynn, for me, was absolutely my favorite character, I'm not 100% sure why he's a hippie, because he was not like that in the original. No. If you want to know what my suspicion is, it's because they're trying to leverage...
The Big Lebowski. Jeff Bridges,
yes, yeah. Big Lebowski character, but we don't need to get into conspiracy theories. I really think that to the extent that Flynn works for me, it's really down to Jeff Bridges, that his character having tried to build something, having kind of, I've just completely lost the idiom. What it's like, man's vision,
man's reach exceeding his grasp.
Yes, reach. Having had a reach that exceeded his grasp in this society, or it's a little unclear what he's trying to do. Having that fail, being separated from his son, having to kind of face himself in a very literal sense and his past failings. I found that compelling just because Jeff Bridges was selling it. Like the scene where he finally confronts Clue at the very end, and he's saying, the dialogue, it's pretty flat. He's like, oh, perfection is unattainable, but it's right in front of us all the time. But then when he says, I'm sorry, Clue, I felt it. Not because this is like the... Not because this is a great payoff for a fantastic setup. It's an acceptable payoff for an acceptable setup. But yeah, Jeff Bridges is just selling it. And the same thing when he sacrifices himself and he says, goodbye, kiddo. I was like, oh man, Jeff, kid, Flynn, my heart. It just worked for me. And yeah, I liked it. And I liked, well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is something we've talked about on the podcast before. The tone of the film is very sincere. And this is sort of a throwback movie in the sense that the original Tron makes no sense in terms of the world of the grid is... To my mind, and I like to think of myself as kind of a computer literate sort of fella, the world of the grid makes no sense. It's unclear if all these programs are like genuine programs that are in the, could be found in the computer and like modified from the, just like from the computer, or if they're all things that you only can interact with and do things with if you're in the grid. That doesn't make much sense because Sam thinks he can delete Clue once he's outside of the grid. So clearly they're positing that everything that happens in the grid is reflected in the computer, which makes no sense. I don't understand how that could possibly be true or, you know, hold any weight at all. But at no point is the movie undercutting the ridiculousness of this premise with... like any sarcasm or any snide remarks. There's never a time where the characters are like, oh, that happened, like, that's crazy, can you say it in English, please? I wrote down the line bio-digital jazz man because I feel like it's an encapsulation of the world building and kind of the ethos of the movie, where it's like, oh, well, what's happening? Bio-digital jazz, man. Parse that sentence and tell me what any of those words are supposed to mean in conjunction with each other. But it's very sincere, which I think is something that, again, we've talked about on this podcast before, that there can feel like there's a little bit of a dearth of sincerity in movies, that they feel like they have to cheapen their premise or behave a little unseriously because they're a movie. And I think it's really nice to see, it's always enjoyable to watch a movie that's taking itself very seriously despite the silliness maybe of the premise. And I think Jeff Bridges and your reaction to Jeff Bridges' character in this movie is a perfect example of that. Because, yeah, I agree. I think he's doing his best to pull at the heartstrings with what he's being given. And in this movie, it's not, I don't think he's being given a ton to pull the heartstrings with, but I agree. The final scene with Clue, and when he kills Clue to save his son, it's good because the movie is treating it very seriously. And I really appreciate that.
Wow, Nathan, you're on a roll today. Because once again, you've perfectly managed to sum up my feelings about it and even reveal some of the feelings that I was struggling to put into words. I think that's absolutely right, that this movie is so well served by the fact that it's wearing its heart on its sleeve. It's being unashamed about its influences and what it's trying to do. It's not trying to undercut itself. It may be trying to be a little bit more than what it is, but crucially, especially in today's cinematic atmosphere, it's not trying to be less than what it is.
Yeah.
And so, though, I think that that perfectly explains moments like Flynn coming onto the dance floor and changing everything. Like, that is so cool, and it works so well because it's unashamedly dramatic and theatrical, rather than trying to make it, I don't know, more realistic, or having Deadpool saying, like, oh, superhero landing, or something stupid like that. So, yeah, I agree 100%. I would like, if you don't mind.
No, if you're, go ahead. Yeah. I would just say on that topic, though, I should give a shout out to the director of this film, which is what?
I know who it is.
Joseph Kosinski, who directed everyone's, like, uncle's favorite movie a couple of years ago when he made Top Gun Maverick, which I think is another movie in a similar vein where everyone was really into Top Gun Maverick and it got all of the, you know, they don't make movies like this anymore crowd up in a tizzy because it was, they enjoyed it so much. But it's clear that the guy just likes making, I don't know, retro throwback sort of action movies. It's a bummer. The fact that he's not at the helm of Tron Ares is yet another knock against the movie, because it just, you know, adds that much more evidence to me that this third movie might not take itself very seriously. It might have some moments where characters are like, oh, the computers are coming alive. That's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, anyway, continue.
No, I was just going to say, the plot of this movie, I think, shifting into a little bit more negative territory, the plot of this movie is very flimsy.
Yeah.
So the basic idea is that Sam is in the grid. Clue, who is a program that Flynn created in his image. He's in the original movie, actually.
He very is, briefly. Yeah, that was crazy.
Clue has turned the grid into an autocratic regime, and he's obsessed with perfection and stuff. His motivation is very generic, and he wants to escape the grid and take over the world. That is insane. I don't know if this is just like, because a lot of the movie's third act or some of it takes place on like a troop carrier. And I don't know if that's supposed to be just like one of many or if Clue actually thinks he can take over the world with what? A couple thousand light infantry, a little bit of air support.
Yeah.
And the light infantry is armed with melee weapons.
Yeah, dude, they're going to tear it up.
Yeah, I don't...
Melee weapons and discs, bro. They'll be throwing discs through us.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be an absolute bloodbath. Yeah, I don't know. I'm... That is silly. And it's one of the... It's one of those things that I struggle to forgive because so much of the movie is based on the... So much of the movie's stakes are based on the idea that it would be bad if Clue gets into the real world. And I'm thinking, it might be like a news story for a couple nights. but I think that he's going to struggle to establish a foothold. And also, the mechanics of all this are very obscure to me. So I'm wondering, Nathan, maybe you can help me out with this. My understanding when I was watching this movie was that any human can go through the portal pretty much at their leisure. Clue can only go through the portal if he has Flynn's disc. It's not explained why that is, why Flynn's disc would allow a computer program to take on a physical form. But that was my understanding, was that Flynn's disc is what allowed Clue... is what would allow Clue to become real and somehow transport his giant ship through. But then I read the Wikipedia plot summary for this, and it says that Flynn's disc is the only thing that lets anyone go through the portal. In which case, it makes no sense that Sam separates from his father with the intention of going through the portal and helping on the other side. He says that, like, I can go through the portal, and like you said, I'll just delete Clue in a few keystrokes. But, of course, if Kevin's disc is the only thing that allows people to use the portal, then what is he planning to accomplish? So did I miss something? Is Wikipedia wrong? Is my memory wrong? What is your understanding of the mechanics of all this?
No, I think Wikipedia is correct. I think Sam is either in-universe just stupid and doesn't understand how things work, and so his plan was just foolhardy to begin with. Alternatively, the screenwriters forgot the rules of their own universe. I'm baffled as to how a program can even get into the real world, because my understanding from the original Tron was that the digitizer took your atoms and digitized them, right? Like, stored them in the computer. And then when you got out of the computer, it undigitized those atoms. But because they're very clear in the movie that they're like, we're not creating the apple from nothing. We're creating the apple from, like, what was digitized. If you weren't digitized, I don't understand how you could be undigitized, because there's that would be creating something from nothing, which, again, in the first movie, they seemed really... And I hate turning the episode into, like, a CinemaSin style, like, actually, this can't happen. But again, it does kind of mess with my enjoyment of the movie if, like, the very framework that the movie is built upon seems as though it's crumbling as soon as I put the slightest amount of scrutiny on the mechanics of these things. Because I agree with you. I don't understand how Clue escaping is, one, possible, or two, even remotely a threat to humanity. Again, we have, like, tanks and missiles. Like, we struggle against Godzilla. We're not going to struggle against 400 dudes with frisbees. We've got that handled.
We've got that stuff on lockdown.
For real. There is no way we lose that fight.
Yeah, I don't know. It's I agree. I also don't like it when I unfortunately end up on Film Bro YouTube and negative reviews are just like just basically a CinemaSins video. But I do think that, yeah, it if the movies, if the very integrity, the structural integrity of the movie's plot is weak, that is a problem, especially if you're noticing it like I was as I was watching. Obviously, Alfred Hitchcock famously invoked refrigerator logic in response to questions about plot and plot holes. But if you're having sofa logic or chair logic, yeah, that's a problem because it leads to it distracts you and it threatens the stakes of the movie. Because if you don't buy the stakes of like, oh, if Clue gets out, that's bad. Well, it's not great, but it's a minor problem, all things considered. That's a problem for the movie. And I also, this extends to character motivations.
Yeah.
Why does Clue not like the ISOs? Flynn just says Clue saw them as an imperfection, and that's it. Like, Clue just... I have no idea why. I don't understand Clue's motivations, and that's also a problem for the movie. Because I don't understand what he stands to gain by this personally or politically or whatever. And yeah, I wish that a little bit more effort had been put into sketching out his character than Clue saw them as an imperfection. There was a coup. Now he's the bad guy.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of implied that like Clue possesses the traits that Kevin did on like the day that Kevin created him, but then wasn't able to grow as Kevin did, that like Kevin learned from his experiences and stuff and grew, but Clue didn't. And Clue looks kind of pissed as soon as the ISOs show up. Like, they don't do anything and he already looks a little irritated by their presence. So I feel like, here's my headcanon, Kevin was racist when he was like younger and then like had a kid and, you know, did a bunch of stuff and then got not racist, but he made Clue when he was still racist. And so that's why Clue doesn't like the ISOs, because he sees them as another race.
I think there's a really good chance of that being exactly what the writers had in mind when they sat down to bang out the script.
Hopefully Tron Ares clarifies these questions for us diehard Tron fans.
Well, speaking of Tron, let's talk about the man himself. The man whose name is on the cover of the box. He is present here. And before we recorded, Nathan and I were talking about the original Tron. And we were in agreement that Tron, the character, was one of that movie's biggest strengths. Again, very simple character, but he's just very heroic, very sincere. He's just a nice, chill dude. I'm not 100% sure why they even included him in this movie if they were going to make him a villain. Because Clue, I don't know, brainwashes him or something. And he turns into Rinsler. And that was one of the biggest jokes we had as children when we were watching this movie, was Rinsler always has a spare. Which it is pretty funny that he's always rocking a spare jet or a spare bike.
And he's the only guy who thinks of this too. Like, everyone else keeps falling out of stuff and they're like, dang it, why didn't I take Rinsler's suggestion to grab two? That's so smart.
Yeah, but anyway, so he's like now just Clue's thug, and then he at the 11th hour decides that he's no longer brainwashed or something. Maybe he reprograms himself. I don't know. Maybe he becomes anti-racist in that moment. And he's like, what am I doing? Working for this bigot. Then he smashes into Clue's plane instead of shooting it. And then he dies. So Why even have him here? I guess if you're going to call your movie Tron, they felt like an obligation to have the series namesake. But honestly, guys, I would have just left him out and left Rinsler as just a conflicted henchman who makes a heel turn because he's moved by Flynn's rising above his bigotry.
Yeah, I don't know if we need to keep going with this old racism metaphor that I stumbled upon. But yeah, I agree. I wrote that Tron is underused in the movie. And again, it makes no sense why they would even include him. He does very little to affect the plot besides just looking cool and doing cool things. Also,
okay, he does look cool and he does do cool things.
Those are both true things, right? The first time he takes out two discs and Sam tries to like copy that and he's like, that's gotta be cheating, right? That's funny. I find that's the kind of stuff I find really funny in movies. But yeah, he doesn't do much. Also, not really the movie's fault, but the name Rinsler is suspiciously close to Rizzler. So watching the movie now is, you know, I just don't think the name has aged very well because now it's very close to another far less serious and very silly sort of name.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, you're not online enough to get some of these references, Elliot. But yeah, Tron, it's just another part of the movie that feels like it was underwritten or, again, feels like stuff that was written by us as kids because the movie is sick, but it just doesn't work.
Yeah, well, let's briefly touch on something that I think does work for the most part, and I'd love to get your opinion on that, and that's the action. I thought that this movie's action was decent. I think that the hand-to-hand combat was definitely its weakest part. That stuff was pretty flat, but the light cycle race, the Star Wars plane fight, I thought all of that was really cool. And simple, undemanding, but effective. I was there for the light cycle race, especially when they were doing all their fun tricks, like trapping the one guy in an increasingly narrow corridor of the light thing. I don't know why he couldn't just break, but whatever. the whole light cycle thing, I think, is just a really cool idea of having to pull off these very risky maneuvers in order to get in front of someone and create a barrier for them to smash into. Even though Clue smashes into a barrier in that fight and he flies off his bike, but he doesn't disintegrate like everyone else has.
Yeah,
that seems like cheating. I guess because he's a boss, he has more health or whatever. But yeah, what did you think about the movie's action?
I think it's serviceable. I think it's definitely elevated a little bit in terms of they keep it fresh. And I think this is something that we kind of talked about in the Mad Max Fury Road episode, that if your movie is going to be action heavy or is going to have more than a few action scenes, you really need to make sure that each one is distinct in some way. So you're not just putting your audience through, oh, look, unless you're like The Raid, where you've got like, or John Wick, where you've got fantastic choreography. And so people aren't going to be bummed if they see, look, it's another shootout. Tron Legacy is not in that camp. They have to rely on ingenuity and creativity, and they do it fantastically. I like the opening Disc Wars section when Sam and Rinsler are fighting on the roof and the camera's upside down. That's sick. I love that. I agree. The light cycles are really cool. It's fun to watch. And then the, very Star Wars-esque escape sequence. So much so that when Sam finally got one, I almost thought his dad was going to say, hey, don't get cocky, kid. But yeah, it's really good. And again, it's clever, innovations and evolutions of the fight scenes, so you aren't bummed every time a fight scene starts. I even think it was kind of smart to not show Sam killing the inexplicably low number of guards guarding Kevin Flynn's disc. Like, it's Clue finally gets the disc, and it's the keystone to his entire project, and he leaves, like, six people in charge of guarding it instead of the 10,000 guys that he had. It's ridiculous. Anyway, but even that, choosing not to show that, I think is more effective than if they had showed it, because we've already seen people do disc fights, and this way, you know, it lets Sam be cool, and then doesn't take away the excitement for the upcoming jet fight. So yeah, I agree. I think the action scenes are pretty good.
All right, well, I'm not sure I have anything else to say. Is there anything else you'd like to touch on?
I just have one thing. This is, you know, just a real nerd sort of thing. But the game that Quora says she can't beat Kevin in is Go, which at the time was a game that famously computers were, like, really terrible at and could not beat humans at. But this joke has aged very poorly, and actually I wrote a paper on this while I was at grad school, that in the mid-2010s, we started using something called the Monte Carlo algorithm to design Go artificial intelligences that far outpace human players, to the point that now the best human player doesn't have a shot against the best computer Go player. Which I just find funny that they tried to throw in a little fun computer Easter egg, and now in 20 years, no one's going to get it because it was rendered null shortly after the film, which I find kind of funny.
Yeah, tough luck.
Anyway, I think we're ready for the final number score. I'll go first. I enjoyed this movie quite a bit. I enjoyed it as a kid. I enjoy it, I would say, just as much, maybe a little less as an adult because of the things that we mentioned, that the plot doesn't work as well if you're really, or if you're, you know, really going to be persnickety about plot details. It maybe falls apart a little bit. But on the whole, it's a really fun movie. It's a really great throwback action sort of film. I'm going to give it a 7.4 out of 10. That's the score I think is fair.
All right, well, I think we're in a similar place. Nice. I enjoyed this movie more than I was expecting to. I enjoy this movie for its sincerity, for just how unabashedly dramatic and theatrical it is. I just like drama, and I'm a romantic. I've said it before when it comes to storytelling. So, like, Clue giving an Emperor Palpatine speech in front of his army while they're chanting, like, Uruk-hai. That's silly, but also it's one of those moments of, like, soaring, high, theatrical, just, I eat it up. Mm-hmm. I think that the characters are flat, the plot is weak. But there, like I said, there's enough there to pull you through and keep you entertained and engaged. And the music and the special effects, except for Clue, the digital de-aging, and Jeff Bridges' performance all add up to make this a good movie. At the end of the day, my biggest problems are that I just wanted more. I wanted more in the grid. I wanted more about Clue. I wanted more of this world. And I can't even get it because they're coming to our world, so in the next movie, so
nice, right nice, yeah.
But anyway, I think this movie's a fun time. I'm going to give it a B-.
Nice. Well, then let's jump over to recommendations. I am going in a little bit of a weird area, but for me, when you start talking about sincerity in movies and movies having silly premises but being greatly benefited by the fact that they take that premise very seriously and then kind of fulfill it in a really interesting way, I'm going to go with the Penny Marshall 80s classic Big, which, if you don't know what Big is, it follows a kid who finds a wishing game at a circus and wishes to be big and wakes up the next day and he's a full adult. He's Tom Hanks. This is Tom Hanks. I think it's like Tom Hanks' breakout role. He was nominated for an Academy Award for it. But it's a silly premise, obviously. It's kind of a ridiculous sort of premise. It's a kid in an adult's body. But the movie takes it seriously, and the movie greatly benefits from it. It's a really interesting movie. If you think of, like, classic cliche sort of 80s movies about rediscovering your inner childhood, Big is, like, the almost reverse of that, where it's a child wishing to not have his inner childhood and then discovering that actually that was really great and he's not ready to be an adult, all while, you know, influencing the adults that he comes into contact with to kind of rediscover their inner childhoods. It's a super fun movie. It's a super sincere movie. I think there's a couple of times, it's kind of like Back to the Future, that a couple of times the premise gets a little weird with it and you kind of have to be okay with the movie being weird. But I think it's a really fantastic movie, and I think if you like Tron Legacy for that sincerity and that old school sort of silly premise taken seriously, I don't think there's a better silly premise taken seriously movie than Big, or maybe Field of Dreams. It's a close race between the two of them, but I think Big is the more fun of the two.
Interesting. I have not seen that movie, so I can't comment. That was a pretty good pitch, honestly.
Thank you.
I'd like to watch it now. Nice. I have more interest now than I did before I heard that. My recommendation is very standard. It's not very weird at all. My recommendation is going to be The Matrix. Yeah. This is also a movie about computers and being in computers. It's got that sense of theatricality. It's got the special effects. I think that so that's the similarities. But it does have that more to it. That the action is really good. Yeah. It's got really interesting ideas, more or less. The special effects are very good for the time. I think that these are two movies that are linked by their sincerity, even though The Matrix is less, it's kind of an angry movie.
It's a little more cynical. It's very sincerely cynical. Yes. I guess if you can be that, but
yes,
yeah,
it's passionate. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It's got all of the thrills and chills that Tron Legacy has. But it also has the deeper world building, the better characters, the stronger action, the stuff that I wanted for Tron Legacy. So if somehow you haven't watched it, which is becoming an increasingly difficult proposition, go ahead and give it a watch. But you know what they say? We've all heard it at one point or another in our lives. Life is hard and full of disappointments.
Yeah, I have to hear it once a week from you.
Well,
also, after you watch The Matrix, maybe give our episode on The Matrix a listen, and then maybe send us an email. Are you excited for Tron, Ares? Are you buying into our new groundbreaking theory that Kevin Flynn is a racist in the original Tron?
If you just, like, have some political ideas that you want to get off your chest, some manifestos, send them to us. We'll read them on the air, unedited.
Holy cow.
We'll platform anyone.
Whoa. That is not true.
We'll have a few internal conversations about our email policy.
But yes, send us an email. Be sure to check out the blog. And thank you so much for listening. We're going to be back here next week with another brand new episode reviewing another movie and discussing the movie news of next week. Who knows what that's going to bring? But look forward to that, and we hope you have a great week in between.